Good evening, everyone. I'm Matt JF, and I'm pleased to be speaking on the meeting tonight. I appreciate the invitation to do so. I have no idea what I'm about to say. I'm speaking on step seven this coming Sunday, and part of me wants to like use this as a way to rehearse whatever I'm going to say for that, because I don't know what I'm going to say for that, but I don't know. We'll see what comes out. So I am a recovered compulsive overeater. I'm presently living in Virginia. And I guess I'll start by qualifying, kind of doing a little bit of the old, what it was like, what happened, what it's like now, two-step, three-step. So what it was like. So I believe that I was born a compulsive overeater. I was overweight my entire life. For my entire adult life, I was clinically morbidly obese. That continued to be true even after I had radical gastric surgery in 2003. I had Roux-en-Y gastric bypass. So they create the pouch and they reroute your small intestine and food gets weird. My top weight before that surgery was 380 pounds. And I'm 5'8". So, you know, no matter how well you carry 380 pounds at 5'8", it shows. And I was still, you know, my weight eventually stabilized, but it sort of ranged between 250 and 270 until February of 2019, when I unexpectedly found myself in this program, and I'll talk about that. And then it fell to a low of 205, and it's now hovering around 230, 235. But the big thing is, like, I kind of don't care that much about it anymore. I mean, it's important to me to be abstinent and be healthy. But those two things are not the same thing for me. That's sort of my journey as a compulsive overeater. What it was like was, I'm not gonna lie, pretty crappy. When I came into program, I eventually grew to conceptualize my disease as this very deeply seated conviction that I am a worthless piece of crap, except it wasn't crap in my head. It was, you know, a much more vulgar word than that. And that I really should never have been born. But since that terrible error was perpetrated on the world, that I should instead kill myself in the most humiliating way possible by just eating myself to death. And I do think that I'm going to really try and keep the focus on my experience, strength, and hope, because I have no idea what anyone else's experience is. I barely understand my own experience most of the time. But I do think it's a fairly common theme that I've heard from people, that feeling of never good enough is what leads a lot of people to want to kind of just fill themselves up with food until they can't feel that never good enough feeling. But then, of course, the results of trying to control feelings with food lead to, you know, even more shame and feelings of not being good enough. And so it just becomes this really terrible, destructive spiral. So that's what it was like. It was just kind of not really fun most of the time. And over the years, I tried most things. I didn't try everything. I never got like shots in my butt or anything like that. But I did cognitive behavioral therapy. I did the most widely cited pain way. I even went to an OA meeting as a kid. I have this vague recollection of a church basement and a bunch of old ladies in a gray sheet. That's how I thought of it then. Now I'm one of the old ladies. I even went to that Pamway had a summer camp that I went to, which was truly horrendous. You know, I tried exercising, I tried, you know, high protein, low carb, I tried, you know, I tried prescription drugs, which you know, I don't think worked terribly well. And hopefully they didn't damage my heart. And of course, they're eventually pulled from the market. So tried a lot of things along the way. Most of my life, I was, quote, trying to lose weight. But, you know, nothing really worked for very long. And then every time something didn't work, it was like, oh, I guess I really am a worthless piece of crap. Like, you know, because it doesn't seem like it should be a hard problem to solve. Calories in, calories out. Like, I'm good at math. And if it, when I'm not good enough at math, I'm good at spreadsheets. Like, how hard could this be? And apparently it was really, really hard. So that brings us to February of 2019. So February 23rd of 2019, these things were true. I was weirdly not, quote, trying to lose weight. Like, I was in a relatively good place with my weight at that point. I knew a lot about 12-step programs because I'd been in a relationship with someone who had recovery in the beverage program and had good friends who were recovered in the beverage program. And so I sort of understood the steps and how they applied and what recovered life looked like. But it was also true on that date that I did not think that Overeaters Anonymous was a program that I qualified for, nor was it one that I had any interest in or thought could possibly be anything but BS. In fact, I'd said that out loud to my then partner, that I thought OA was BS. And she asked me why. And I said, because, you know, I'm not powerless over food. I'm not one of those people, said the guy who had gastric bypass surgery back in 2003. And I literally said out loud, you know, go F yourself. Not to her, but like to anyone who would think that I was one of those people. So I feel like I'm coming across as a terrible vulgarian. So like on that date, I believed that OA was bullshit. Like I really, it was not a thing that I thought was, certainly I didn't think I qualified for it. And I thought it was probably just kind of silly. I also, I had a, for work, I had on a, I had a list of things to listen to when I have time. I didn't work in recovery. I worked with entrepreneurs, but I had this idea that there should be a program sort of like AA for entrepreneurs, like a fellowship. So I had a list of things to listen to when I have time, and it had OA, or it had a Big Book step study on it. So, when I found myself faced with a 17-hour drive, because my flight home from visiting my grandmother with my daughter was canceled. I was like, oh, perfect. I'll listen to a Big Book step study. So I went to YouTube and I fired up, you know, search for a Big Book step study. And I mentioned I was an agnostic. I am no longer an agnostic. And what happened next is perhaps one of the best reasons why I can think of, you know, that there's a pretty good reason for me not to be an agnostic anymore. Because when I typed Big Book Step Study into YouTube, YouTube is owned by Google. I work in digital marketing. So I knew why what happened next happened. And what happened next was that YouTube, aka Google, very helpfully suggested as its very first link an Overeaters Anonymous Big Book Step Study. So not an ad, but like no one paid for it. The very first link was this Overeaters Anonymous Big Book Step Study. So I was immediately pretty annoyed and a little offended, and wasn't going to listen to it just out of spite. But then out of even a little more spite, I was like, all right, Google, challenge accepted. I'll listen to this crazy BS. And so I did. And 20 minutes in, my goose was cooked. No pun intended. I mean, It's Laurie C is the name of the person who did that step study. It's on YouTube. It's free. It's wonderful. I highly recommend it. He was qualifying, and he was qualifying in a way that I actually found pretty disgusting. Like I was thinking, I'm going to have to turn this thing off because I don't want to pay to clean up the puke out of this rental car. And that's when he said, for me, there are some foods that once I start, I can't stop, and I can't stop from starting. And that was it for me, because like I now think of step one as, for those who aren't familiar, if there's anyone on the line, we admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives become unmanageable. I now think of taking step one for me was like, I had to stop denying an undeniable truth. It was there was simply a huge body of evidence, observable documentary evidence that there were some foods that once I started, I couldn't stop, and I couldn't stop from starting. And it would be like me denying that I have brown eyes. Like, I don't know if you can see, they're brown. And if I said, like, no, they're blue. They're blue. Can you see they're blue? They're not blue. So for me to deny that I was a compulsive overeater at that point would be like, literally, I would have to be crazy. And you would think I was. So step one for me was that. Step two came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. That was just like, I had to capitulate to the irrefutable logic of an irrefutably logical statement. If I am powerless over food, and my life is unmanageable, and I would really, and unmanageable in the case of step one, my interpretation of it is, I'm insane. If I want to return to sanity, and I'm helpless over the thing that is making me crazy, I think there are only two possibilities. Either there is a source of power greater than me that will be sufficient and sufficiently reliable to enable me to remain abstinent and recover, or there's not. And if there's not, I'm just kind of screwed. So I decided to put all my chips on. There is a source. And I didn't worry about what it was. I mentioned I was agnostic. I grew up with no religion. I think my mom hates when I say this, but I think my Facebook profile still says, born Jewish, raised by wolves, like just religiously, not like my parents were wolves. But like I grew up with no religion at all. And I was like a little spiritual, but I didn't pray. And I didn't like, I thought that if there was like something out there, it surely had nothing to do with me. I no longer believe that, but I just didn't worry about it. I just was like, you know what? If the time comes when, thank you. If the time comes when I need to have a clear conception of what my higher power is, I guess I will, or I won't recover. And then step three was just like, I'm just kind of agreeing to move on to step four. And really like the way I think about the steps now, and so I finished. So I got abstinent. I was, struck abstinent. I made a list of the foods that once I started, I couldn't stop, and I couldn't stop from starting. And I, and then the next morning, I just woke up as a person who didn't eat those foods anymore and ever. And I haven't ever since. It's a little over 1600 days since then. I don't really pay attention to the calendar because it's so arbitrary, but we count in base 10. So I count every 100 days. I finished working the steps out of the big book with a sponsor about 7 or 8 months later, and I've been living recovered ever since. So I know I don't have much time left, and I just want to say a little bit about what it's like. What it's like is unimaginably bizarre and unbelievably better. I've gone from someone who like had prayed a handful of times in his life and did not believe in any kind of a conventional God. And I still like my conception, my higher power is that God is literally everything, period. To someone who prays like at least once a day, most days now, and has a set of totally non-dogmatic, very practical beliefs that are like rock solid faith that enabled my life to work so much better than it ever did before recovery. And I don't just mean the food. Like I don't give a crap about the food anymore. Now, if you're new, I will say like, it is important to identify the foods that once you start, you can't stop and you can't stop from starting and stop eating those foods. Like that's just table stakes. But to live recovered, to have emotional sobriety, it ain't about the food anymore. It's not about the abstinence. It's about recognizing that I don't need to walk around carrying resentment because I don't understand anything. And that's okay. That's just the way the game is built. I don't understand why I do what I do most of the time. What makes me think I could understand why anyone else in the world does what they do? And so why would it be important to me to harbor resentments about that? I don't know why people do what they do. And that's okay. That's not a character flaw, and it's not a defect in my mental processing, maybe. It's just the way it works. There's 86,400 seconds in every day, and I've spent every single one of them trapped in here, and none of them paying any visits to anyone else's head. So maybe, just maybe, I can live with the fact that I don't really know anything of substance, and I don't need to have my life be better. And the more I remember that I don't really know what's going on, and that that's okay, because it's not like none of this is about me. What all of you might be thinking right now, like I can look at all of your faces. I have no idea what anyone's thinking. Some are smiling, some aren't, some are chuckling when I make a joke, some aren't. And what does it matter? There was a time when I would have like been obsessed with like getting someone to laugh. And now it's like, what does it matter? It doesn't. Life is short. And I would like to die recovered. And in order to die recovered, since I don't know when death is coming, like I think I just have to remain abstinent and do my best to live in 10, 11, and 12 every single day. And as long as I do that, maybe I'll die recovered. And since recovered to me means better, I'll take it. So I know my time is up with that. I will pass. Thank you for the opportunity to speak tonight.